You are now listening to the Animal Control Report with your hosts,
Ashley Bishop
and Harold Beachwood.
What?
Oh, that's my alias. Did you know your alias is your first, no, your middle name, which my middle name is actually not Harold, but it's close, and the first street you lived on. So what would yours be?
It'd be Nicole Acre?
Oh, that's not a bad nickname. We'll have to ask our guests when they come on. But before we do that, please make sure you check out the website, keepithumane.com. You may only have a few days left to nominate someone for the Animal Control Officer and Animal Control Agency of the Year. So please do that at keepithumane.com/Animal Control Report. Also, please like, share, rate the podcast. What else we got going on, Bishop? We got social media.
Yeah, we got social media. Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, apparently.
Apparently.
I don't know. I've not seen anything come through, and I don't do TikToks.
Well, that's probably why. Tick around and find out. No? Okay.
No, it's not, because that gets you anaplasmosis and Lyme and
here we go. The Lyme disease. Good play. That was witty. We're going to have a cool guest. This is a guest that I'm like, all right, I'm open like to having a great discussion. Obviously, as most people know on the show, like I only eat plants. Now, we'll discuss with our guest why I don't use the terminology vegan, but we'll get into that in a little bit. But yeah, I only eat plants. Bishop, do you ever eat plants?
I eat plants, but I also eat animals.
That's fair. And I think that's good because then you can give some perspective on your views and such as well. And I think it'll be fun to do. Have you ever dealt with like in the field, any advocates like that were like picketing somewhere or like outside of like a puppy mill or what's the other place? A slaughterhouse.
I don't have slaughterhouses, believe it or not. Well,
you have milk houses up there though, don't you?
Not in my jurisdiction.
No.
Well, I mean, yeah, we have milk houses, but no, we don't have.
Is that what they call it, a milk house?
Yes.
Oh. Really?
Yeah. If you've got a large farm with plenty of cattle on it, yeah, it's a milk house.
Well, I ask you and all of our listeners to keep an open mind. Just, and myself too, because, I mean, even as you hear me say, like, I only kind of, when people ask or when I describe like my lifestyle, I usually just say I like to eat plants or I only eat plants versus the V word.
Which we've actually talked about that you need to start using the V word.
Well, we have because of the whole like help change the negative connotation, just like we do here on the show with the dog catcher and animal control even.
Mm-hmm. And so you don't listen to your own advice. I see how it
start.
Is.
I'm going to start listening to your advice because you're my better half in regards to things. Anything fun happen recently?
No, not really. I had a knock on wood quiet week and now I'm going to be off for a week. So I'm over the weather changes though up here.
What's it like?
So today it's supposed to get up to 86 degrees and the last week it's been like 65. Whole week.
That's bipolar.
Yeah. But it's Wisconsin. That's what we do.
Hmm. You know, it's pretty much always like 68 and beautiful where I'm at. So just saying.
Well, you also have hurricanes.
No, we don't. We had one mini tropical storm and like one in the last 100 years. So we're good.
No.
You know, what we have is high taxes and gas and gas and gas prices. We are hiring. Gas prices are stupid. It was like $7 a gallon recently. I found a place that was like $5.59, but still.
It's $3.50 up here.
Yeah, well, it's California. this is what you get. You get to pay more and drive more. So,
on the highways waiting for traffic to get through, so you're just wasting gas.
Yeah, and I will say, at least here in Southern California, people are going to be like, what? I mean, we do have traffic, but it's not like LA traffic. LA traffic, nah, forget about it. I'm flying drones. I'm getting a man-made drone and flying around that city because that's not happening. All right. Well, let's jump in. Let's get our guest on. They're probably patiently waiting. We see her. Oh, yeah. That's the other thing. If you're listening on Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Actually, this is available on YouTube as well, so you can actually see our guest there. And my and Bishop's face, I'm sure you want to see Bishop's face way more than mine, but it's okay. Welcome, Melissa White. You are the Food for Thought Program Manager with Animal Place. Let's just jump in. What the heck is a Food for Thought Program Manager?
Hi. Well, thank you so much for having me, first of all. I'm excited to be here. So before I dive into Food for Thought in particular, I just want to give a little bit of background on Animal Place, because that's how Food for Thought began.
Okay.
So our executive director and co-founder, Kim Sterla, comes from an animal shelter background, and she was working at her local humane society, and it became very apparent to her that her colleagues had a disconnect between the way that they were looking at traditional companion animals like cats and dogs versus farmed animals like cows, pigs, and chickens. And it became extremely apparent to her when one day a pig came into the shelter, which happens sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I've done it. Have you?
Yeah. And everybody at the shelter loved this pig. They named her Zelda. They doted on her. They shared their lunch with her. Absolutely adored her. And one day they had a fundraising event at the shelter and ham was served. And no one really made that connection that, okay, this could have been Zelda or it could have been her brothers and sisters. So thus Animal Place was born, because Kim so badly wanted to save this little pig because no one was wanting to take her in and take care of her. They wanted to take her in and slaughter her for food. So Zelda was the first resident of Animal Place in 1989. And so she got a happy ending. I'm so happy for her. I wish all farmed animals had the same ending. But yeah, that's kind of how Animal Place came to be. And you can tell from that story that, of course, Kim is passionate about the Food for Thought program, which is we encourage animal shelters, in particular nonprofit organizations, to extend their compassion to all animals by adopting a vegan or vegetarian menu policy for their events, not for themselves. We're not asking them to go vegan or vegetarian, just to use the organization's funds to protect all animals, because that's, they're compassionate people. So that's an overview. I definitely, my team does a lot of outreach to organizations. I personally handle our grant opportunities, which I'd love to get into, and just help people apply for grants and walk them through that process of what that looks like. So yeah, that's in a nutshell what we do.
It's funny you mentioned the pig thing, because yesterday we got, someone came up to us. I was sitting in the office and they're like, the pig escaped its enclosure in the back and it's running around. So we go back there. And he decided to go into another enclosure, so we had to move him. And that was not, they're hilarious animals. Like mm-hmm. their personalities are so rich. Like, and if you've never truly like interacted with a pig, he did not want to go and was feisty as F.
Mm-hmm.
But he still went. Mm-hmm. And then he got treats. I gave him some treats and he liked that.
Yeah. They love treats. Everybody does. I do.
Okay, so here's how I found out about this. Like, I attended the New England Federation of Humane Societies earlier in 2023. And while I was there, I met somebody with your organization that was talking about, basically they helped with a grant fund the menu that was all vegan. So I, obviously for me, that is vegan. I did it, Bishop. But I cheat too. Like, let me be honest. I'm vegan like 99.938. Like the same amount of fatality rate that rabies has, I'm vegan. And so like that means I'm basically vegan. I will occasionally like eat an egg and baked good, or like if there is honey in something, I'm like, all right, cool. And like I don't go around like throwing red paint on people, but we can get back into that later because I know that's that misconception of veganism. But when I was there and like and hearing about it, I was like, this is pretty incredible. No one would know about this, like mm-hmm. that these grants are even that exist. And then what I think is even cool, if you don't mind kind of maybe just going back a little bit to the founder, like they worked in an animal shelter. So they have that background, right?
Yep.
And so I think that like there's such a connection from that aspect on where they came from to what they see kind of the needs are and how to support that now.
Yeah, for sure. So I think it's invaluable to our program in particular, just because she experienced this firsthand and had this shelter background. So she knows what it's like to be in shelters. And the way that my team operates is we recognize how incredibly difficult it is to work in an animal shelter, to be an animal control officer. And we want to make adopting these policies as easy as possible, because the last thing we want to do is add another thing to a very full plate of people who are often overwhelmed, stressed, burnt out. So we'd never say, oh, you got to do this other thing. We're like, okay, we have all these resources on our website. We have grants to help you. So we definitely operate based on that viewpoint. So I think Kim has definitely helped us with that, just recognizing that.
How widely accepted do you think it is? I mean, there are some people that are obviously very diehard meat eaters, mm-hmm. if you will. So how easy is it to get people to accept it?
You know, that's a great question. It's difficult to get people to even respond to our messages because people are busy, you know, there's a lot going on. But I would say when we do talk to people, it's not widely acceptable, but a lot of people in animal shelters are pretty open-minded because they're compassionate about animals, right? So we have had success. We have over 600 organizations that have adopted vegan or vegetarian menu policies. So it's definitely, it's going somewhere. It's slow moving. It's public policy work. So that always takes time. But I would say, I mean, I don't know the percentage on it, but there are people who are receptive. And of course, there are people, depending on where they are in the world, you know, if they're in farmland, obviously they're going to be less receptive to, I don't want to go vegan, you know, but if in places like California, a lot of them are very receptive. So the geographic location determines that as well. So it's hit or miss, honestly, but we are determined and we're making strides. So it's not something that's just going nowhere. We're definitely making moves.
And in addition to like just keeping an open mind, I'm going to read some of this menu stuff. And I just want to see how this, what the reaction is when I'm reading that, especially you, Bishop, like as somebody that, obviously you eat plants too, but like if your primary, if your main source of protein is meat, I'm just curious how these sides may sound or just in general. So a simple event menu may look like this: seasonal grilled veggies, corn on the cob, portobello mushrooms, chili, potato salad, potato chips. So I left out a few things intentionally. How does that sound?
Sounds fine to me.
So in addition to that, would you try a veggie burger or would you try a veggie dog? Would you try it?
Yes. Okay, so here's the thing. I would be more likely to try it at an event like this solely because it's not ultimately, and this is going to sound horrible, but it's not coming out of my pocketbook.
Of course.
So it's a perfect place to try it because I'm getting to try it without having to purchase an entire box of it and then decide I don't like it. So yes, I would.
In addition to that, I'll be honest, like there's an occasional time that I'll like the and enjoy a substitute meat type of, and that stuff, like it's grown substantially over just even the last 3 to 5 years, like the amount of non-meat meat that's available. Now, if you're someone that is like me, that's like, ah, I kind of want to know what's in my food. And then you start reading the back of the ingredients thing, and then you see like riboflavin mixed with tocopheryls and words I can't pronounce that don't even make sense. You're like, I don't know if this is any better for me than, you know. So that's something to keep in mind when we're doing that, is like, what is our fake meats, if you will, or our mock meats? What are they made from? How simple ingredients can they be? But I move on because I want to read more. How about a taco bar? Rice, beans, salsa, avocado, tofu, lettuce, mocked chopped meat, vegan shredded cheese, vegan sour cream, in tortilla chips. I will say, again, like the vegan sour cream stuff and the vegan cheese, I could do without. But
that scares me coming from Wisconsin.
Well, I could do without it just because like all the oils and stuff and like the refined stuff that goes in it. Now, I will tell you this. If you are a true like non-vegan, and those cheeses actually taste pretty similar to like real cheeses to what I've been told. I've never really had cheese in my life much because I've been lactose intolerant my entire life. So mm-hmm. I kind of started off like that. But I will say like the cashew based stuff, more of the homemade stuff. That's the way to go with the fake cheeses, in my opinion, just saying. Okay. So that's just, some of the stuff, right? They got veggie wraps, eggplant sandwiches, hummuses, hummus and falafels. I mean, everybody loves hummuses.
Yes.
My child will go in the refrigerator and just eat hummus by the spoonful.
Yeah. I mean, so there's just, the list keeps going and going. I'm not going to read you the whole menu because I'm really getting hungry now. But like fresh fruit, right? Desserts, like all of the things that you would expect. It's not just, don't think that you're just going to get a slab of tofu and some salt and be like, here you go. Like they actually do a great job. So talk a little bit. Let's jump in, Melissa, to just, if I'm listening and I'm like, well, this is kind of interesting. So I can adopt this menu and get some sort of financial, what's that word I'm looking for? Assistance to do so.
Yeah. So I would love to talk about the grant opportunities that we have available. So we have two grant opportunities. We have our policy grant and we also have our vegan event grant. So first I'll talk a little bit about our policy grant. So this is a one-time gift to organizations who adopt either a vegan or vegetarian menu policy within the last 6 weeks is what we tend to do because people will come to us and be like, we've had this for 5 years because it's more of an incentive to get people to adopt the policies. So we have that available for vegan policies. It's $1,000. For vegetarian menu policies, it's $250. So there's definitely more of an incentive to go for the vegan one. but it's really great for organizations to see, oh, if we do this, we're going to get a little bit of help. But then we also have our vegan event grant, which I really like personally. This is the one that I push to a lot of people because it's like you were saying, Ashley, like it's like you get to try out a vegan event before you fully commit. So what it is it's a food reimbursement of up to $1,000 in food costs for an organization to try their first fully vegan event. So they can do this before they adopt a policy just to see how their supporters react, how their board reacts, how their donors react. And then they get to vote on whether or not they want to adopt a policy after the event. So I really like that one just because it's less commitment at first and you get to just kind of test the waters and see how it goes. But I walk people through the grant process. We have our qualifications and eligibility on our website, animalplacefoodforthought.org, to see if your organization, if you're listening to this, might qualify for one of these grants. But yeah, that's what we've got available to encourage people to adopt these policies for their events.
That's super cool. I know, so I've done some volunteer work with the ASPCA, and we always had at least Meatless Mondays. So when we go out on deployment, typically they would provide the lunch, but then in the evening we would kind of be on our own for dinners, but they reimbursed us. And if our meal was not meatless, they wouldn't reimburse that meal.
Mm-hmm. And it's actually, to my knowledge, with staff, if you actually are employed by them, they will only cover vegan food for their per diem. So if they're like out, no matter what day it is now, it has to be
I had heard that was changing, but I haven't gone out with them.
Which is like, so if you ever finish that book that I always talk about, A Traitor to His Species, Henry Berg was not vegan or vegetarian. However, he adopted that same mindset for the humane treatment of animals, regardless if you, and in fact, the whole ASPCA started with working like livestock, whether it was our equine or our cattle, like that was his main focus. And then it kind of shifted. Turtles. Yeah. And turtles. And then it shifted to the dogs and cats and such. So it's really interesting in that regard. So what I'm hearing you say, Melissa, is there's $1,000 for an organization to at least try it. However, quick pro tip to our listeners, do not try to get your $1,000 vegan catered event from Whole Foods because you'll get a bag of chips and a kombucha. That's it. So beware. You want to work with other, like, you know, real caterers that can do vegan menus. Talk about, like, all right, so I'm listening now. I'm like, I'm interested. I'm going to go to your website. I'm going to go to animalplacefoodforthought.org. And then you can also just go to animalplace.org and then find Food for Thought through that as well if you want to do it that way. But animalplacefoodforthought.org is the direct link. And then there's that grants drop down to the right hand side at the top. Talk to me about, like, all right, I'm applying for the grant, and how long do I have, does this policy have to live?
I mean, preferably indefinitely, but we don't set like a you have to have this policy for a year or something. We don't set that. What we do is we send out documents for each organization to sign to show that they're committed to having this policy, sort of indefinitely, I suppose, but just so that we have the document showing that this is in place and you all committed to this. But we're not going to be like, hey, pay us our $1,000 back if an organization goes back on the policy.
Yeah, say they try it and they're like, the conference feedback was like, the food sucked, we need meat, like I need to eat a baby cow or whatever, like something just really mean. I would think for one meal, you'd be fine, people. Like,
yeah,
how long have you been vegan?
I've been vegan for about 10 years, and before that, vegetarian for 8 years. So it's been a very long time for me.
People, look at her. Go to our YouTube channel again. That is, you can just Google or YouTube the Animal Control Report, or put in YouTube.com, the @ keep it humane. She's 95 years old.
Yes.
Look how great she looks. You are missing out, man. This vegan menu is no joke. You know, it's funny. I think I just want to talk about some of the misconceptions and stereotypes. And we've had, I think you even have said it, Bishop. What does PETA stand for?
People eating tasty animals. I mean,
never heard that before.
Oh, really? Oh, maybe it's a Wisconsin thing.
No, she's heard it.
I'm teasing. I hear it all the time. Okay. I used to work at PETA, so.
Got it.
Well, that's actually one of our highest rated episodes. We interviewed Daphna Nachmanovich from PETA. She's one of the, she's like.
How the hell did you get that name correctly, Dan?
Because it's Daphna, bro. Like, that's Daphna Nachmanovich. You can't mess that shit up. She's like the lead of the investigations. And they do great work. But they have this, PETA has this like negative connotation because some of the stuff they do, like a couple years ago when it was like the buzzword of like getting rid of some of these negative terms like the Cleveland Indians or the Washington Redskins. PETA was like, pause. They were like, can we change the bullpen to the arm barn in baseball? It's like, we appreciate your cute little slogans, but get the fuck out of here with that. Like, no one's going to change the name of a bullpen to the arm barn. Like, and so those things, the reason I even bring that up is because of those things are which causes some of that. It's the same stuff with no kill in our industry. It really is. Mm-hmm. It causes like this disconnect or this divisiveness. Instead of PETA just coming out and be like, eat whatever you want, we think vegan food is better for not only you physically, long-term health, etc., but clearly it's better for the animals. If we lived in, and actually Seoul, South Korea just launched some information that they're going to stop. They're going to like outlaw dog as meat trade, I think as soon as 2024. Yeah. Awesome. I just saw a headline for that. But like, if you looked at the animals in the shelter and then like correlated that to what it's like at a slaughterhouse, right? And the similarities that that may be, I think people would be less inclined to eat this little, look at this guy. He's like, I'm not food, even though he loves food, bro. Loves it. But like that aspect of just correlating the two, that animals are, you know, sentient beings that deserve the best, in my opinion. So that's just me. That's just me.
Yeah. I mean, I think there, it's just in our society, we're taught a certain way too, where we're taught that some animals are friends and some animals are food. I grew up that way. You know, I wasn't born vegan. My family ate meat, dairy, and eggs all the time. But it's something that, thank you, internet. I came across some horrifying factory farm footage when I was 11 years old. So you can imagine, I'm like a little kid, like traumatized by this footage. I'm like, what is happening? So as somebody who always loved animals, it was very terrifying to see that. So I think it's not necessarily common knowledge, and it's something that you kind of have to find on your own. And that's why Food for Thought, we're so education focused, because we recognize not a lot of people know what's happening in factory farms and slaughterhouses. So we're here to just let people know and, you know, just give them the information and they can take it as they will. But for me, I just know I was devastated when I saw the footage that I did. So it's really terrible.
I'm going to throw something out there. I have absolutely no idea the validity to it because, you know, yay, Facebook. But I think it's a little bit funny during this conversation. I came across a meme the other day. Our Ouroboros steak is a DIY steak meal kit for growing gourmet steaks from one's own cells.
No, this is somewhat real, bro.
Is it?
It is.
So, I mean, you can have that. That's a whole new level of auto cannibalism. But would you ever consider it?
I mean, for me, I'm all for using cells to create meat instead, because that means no animals have to die. I personally wouldn't eat it because I would be grossed out. I was never a fan of meat in general. So I was like, okay, I don't know about that. It's kind of weird, but I love it as an alternative for people who are big meat eaters and they enjoy it. Cause it's just, it seems to me like it would be more humane.
Maine. Sorry. Really, I couldn't resist that. It's almost like eating a scab steak. So I'm going to pass. We were all kids once, like, come on. Well, I want to clear up some of the misconceptions though, as we continue through, like with your organization and their ability to help more animals, you know, I think it provides not only our community, like just a better outcome in general. Like we are focused so heavily focused. I'm going to change gears a little bit on no kill, right? This live release rate in our animal shelters. Like, let's save them all. Which obviously I agree with. Like, I don't want to have to euthanize anything. However, like, you have people that work for that organization that preach that, but then they're eating a cow or a chicken. And mm-hmm. So it's so, what's the word I would call, Bishop? That's a thing. Hypocritical?
Yeah.
Like, put your money where your mouth is. Ooh. get it? Because, like, because your mouth, like, you're putting meat in your mouth, but you're trying to save them all. So I don't know. I think like any organization that has this like extreme approach to anything, in my opinion, is not an organization that I think is operating consciously. I think they're operating emotionally. And what's interesting about your program is it wasn't like, I don't know. It doesn't seem like you were there in the aspect of like making a mockery of people that ate meat. I didn't get that vibe at all. I just got that, like, hey, we're this resource. We provide this grant opportunity for you to get up to $1,000 to have a vegan meal at your events. Like, here's how you do it. So I thought that was really cool. Tell me, if you were to, like, if someone was like, all right, they were like, Melissa, what was the most shocking video that you saw about, like, how cruel the meat industry is? Like, if you were like, watch this video, if somebody asked, I don't want you to be like, watch this video. But if somebody was like, hey, I'm just curious, what video would you recommend for someone to watch to understand how cruel the meat industry really is?
You know, there's a documentary I always recommend that kind of scarred me for life. it scarred me for life, so please watch it. But it's called Earthlings. I don't know if you've heard of it before. Mm-mm. But it's a very comprehensive overview of not only the meat industry, but dairy, eggs, fur farming, just all the different ways that we use animals for their flesh or for their fur or anything that, any industry that we are exploiting animals, essentially. But I always recommend that. I think as far as if you want to watch a short video, for me, the dairy industry hurts my feelings the most, I feel like, just because it's founded on this idea of constantly forcibly impregnating cows. And I can't imagine being pregnant my whole life.
Bishop, how about you? You have two kids.
I don't know. The pregnancy with the twins wasn't actually horrible, but
I don't see any more kids running around your house. So you are.
Yeah. But it's like, it's the videos of that where you can see the babies being taken away from the mothers when they're born, and the mothers just chasing their babies and wailing for days and days and days because they're just devastated that their baby was taken away from them. Because, of course, like, to produce milk, it's the same way with humans. You have to be pregnant. You have to give birth. So a lot of people, it's interesting how many people I've spoken to who don't know that about cows, that they have to be pregnant as well to produce milk. Like, I remember talking to my dad, he's in his 70s now, and he was like, I didn't know that actually. So it's interesting how much information is not just readily out there for us, like from birth, you know, the internet's there, but we're not told that. So yeah, I just think any videos of babies being taken away from their mothers, I don't know, that like really strikes me and makes me really upset to see that. So,
Bishop, have you ever watched any like vegan type of documentaries or anything, like even like something like Blackfish or The Cove or anything like that?
I've seen a couple of, not necessarily documentaries, but you know, the videos that especially organizations like PETA and stuff have put out there. And it, the one thing that is always interesting to me is I'm from a farming community, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. Happy cows come from Wisconsin, damn it. Not California. But I think back to the farms that we do have here, and granted they are typically a lot smaller. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like the farms that are smaller have a better ability to be more humane. And so for as many farms as we have here, I don't see the things that are seen in those videos. And sometimes I also get concerned that there's obviously some truth to these videos. I understand that, and it's probably mostly truth, but it's also a form of media, and you can always change the media to fit your narrative.
I mean, there's always the answer on the right or left side, no matter what you're looking for, right? So you can find something right now that'll say a vegan diet is bad for your health. Right. And then you can obviously find something that says a vegan diet is good for your health. And same with a meat diet. I will say, if you were ever thinking about it, if you were on the cusp I was like, I just maybe want to try a vegan diet. I don't know about you, Melissa, but I would tell people, like, if someone was like to me, like, hey, man, what would you start with first? Dairy would be the number one thing to eliminate. Just from a health standpoint, I think it's so unhealthy for people. And you can see the transition. Like, if somebody drinks or does dairy, eats a lot of cheese, and let's just say they're like, hey, I'm interested in weight loss, they cut dairy out for 30 days, you will see a significant, like, just difference, like, in their face and body within that 30 days. Just because dairy, like, for whatever reason, causes people to, like, swell. I don't know if there's, like, an unknown allergic reaction. And also, I'm not a nutritionist. I'm just speaking from, like, what I've seen and what I've heard. And so, in that aspect, I don't want to get all preachy on you, but I know that, like, there are health benefits. And just at the end of the day, like, this is what I tell people too, is like, do what you feel is best for you. But if you know, like, maybe skipping one, what's the really famous fast food chicken place? Bishop, Chick-fil-A?
Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, that one. Like, skipping a Chick-fil-A and going to, you know, Chipotle and getting, like, a vegan bowl or a burrito. It is possible. So just something that.
And I mean, I even did. So when my girls were, because I breastfed my kids until they were two, but they were very spitty babies. Mm. And so I went dairy free for them because of that.
Okay.
It is incredibly difficult though, because there is dairy in things that you don't think about dairy being in.
Yep.
I am the ingredient reader that you see in the grocery store. I'm like,
same.
Well, as am I, but that's for dyes for my kids.
Do you not do red dye 40? Is it red dye 40?
Red dye anything.
Mm-hmm. How come?
Behavioral issues.
Hmm. Where does red dye come from?
Chemicals.
Hmm. Okay.
And the UK and areas actually ban all dyes that are unnatural, but the US hasn't picked up on it.
Well, Melissa, what else do we have before we wrap up the show? We got a few minutes left, and I just wanted to see, like, is there anything we didn't get to chat about, or do you just want to, you know, reiterate on a few things? Again, the website is animalplacefoodforthought.org.
Yeah, I would just say check out our website. We're always available. I'm always available to answer questions, or, you know, if people are like, hey, I don't know. I'm curious about this, but I'm not sure. Just need some reassurance to maybe try it. You can email me directly at melissa@animalplace.org, or our general email is foodforthought@animalplace.org. But I would check our website. We have so many resources on there. We have a brochure that has just a one-page thing of how to adopt why to adopt a policy, our grant opportunities, and just anything that you would need to maybe convince your board to consider this. So we have that available. And I just want to say also, because I know a lot of people are in these rural farm communities, you don't have to tell people that you have a vegan menu policy, because we have that concern a lot. A lot of our organizations who have signed on with us just won't say it. Or I know, Daniel, you're not fond of the word vegan. A lot of them will use plant-based instead because that sounds less scary to their supporters. We have a plant-based menu policy because there's just so many, like you were saying, negative connotations with the word vegan. So we meet people where they're at, and we're not saying you have to be like, we're vegan, we're better than everybody. You know, like, not like anything like that. Just whatever works best for them. And yeah, I would just say, please do reach out. If you're even slightly considering it, I'd love to chat with anybody who's listening to this more about the process of adopting a policy and why it should be done.
What does your organization have to be? So like us, the Animal Control Report, say we decide to do an event someday. Like, we don't have a board. We're not a 501c3. Do we qualify?
Yeah, so it'd be more whoever the executive director is, or directors, people.
Holler! I'm already vegan, bro. Come on.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. I think, you know, just like you have the power to implement that as the executive director.
I see. Okay. So you don't need to be like 501 or anything like that.
We do require a 501c3 organization for the grant opportunities, but of course, like you can still have a menu policy, and when people adopt menu policies, we promote them on our website and on our social media pages. So it's kind of like this connection, and we support each other. So there are still benefits to having it. And of course, the main benefit is that you are saving even more animals. Like, you're already doing so much for animals, but you get to do even more when all your events are vegan. And it's just introducing people to a vegan meal. And I'll just say real quick, in just one vegan event, you can save up to 150 animals, depending on how many people are at your events, if you have big events. But yeah, it's a really great thing to do and very easy. It can be easy. So,
well, thank you for taking the time today to come on and chat with our listeners. And I think like some of the listeners may have like, when they started the episode, like, I don't know. But then maybe now they're like, all right, you know what? It's 2023. Like, I can adept. Adept or adept? Adept. What's adept mean? What's a bishop? What's adept? Is that even a word?
Yes. I think it means that you are good at something. You're adept at it.
Yeah, well, they're adapting to life. They're like, they're I'm good adapting. At life. They're like, I'm good at life. I'm going to adept a vegan menu. Well, I'm glad this exists, and I'm glad you took the time to really just help our listeners understand that there is this option. You know, we're grateful that we have listeners throughout the world that have their own organizations, or they're part of their own organizations, or and that's the other thing too, is like, it's not just for a conference. Like, this could be if you're an actual shelter and you're throwing a fundraising event, you could apply for in that aspect too. So it's multifaceted, and we appreciate that. Bishop, what else you got for Melissa?
I challenge everybody that is going to go to any training or anything, even if, you know, they've got to do a meal on their own, to try a vegan or vegetarian meal. Even if you do it just once, even if you're regularly a meat eater, try it.
All right, we're going to end you with a couple tips. So, Melissa, what is your go-to comfort food vegan meal that if someone was like, we'll have it made right now, and it'll be made by like the best vegan chef in the world, what are you having?
Any kind of curry, honestly. It could be Indian or Thai. That's the thing I'll just throw briefly out there, that a lot of like Indian and Thai places, you can easily order vegan at them. Mm-hmm. So I didn't discover those cuisines until I went vegan. But yes, curry all day, every day.
yellow curry, green curry, where are you at?
Yellow curry, my favorite. Curry.
So here's mine. Though no one asked, I'm just going to tell you. Anyway. It's fine. So I'm going to have that chef whip up the bet. And people are going to be like, that sounds gross. But if you had like a really trained, good vegan chef, and it started with, all right, just hear me out, people. We're going to have a tofu scramble, but made well. It's not just going to be white tofu, chunky. Like, they're going to scramble up some tofu. Then you're going to have a side of tempeh bacon. Okay. And then in that, you're going to have some potatoes. But in the potatoes, there's going to be spinach, mushrooms, zucchini, a little bit of carrots, but thin, because they got to be soft. You can't have the crunchy carrots in that bad boy. And then you're going to have a little side of French toast. Okay, and a fresh juice. What am I missing? Man, I'm hungry though. breakfast is the way to go. Just all the time for me, I'll eat breakfast anytime, every time. But, you know, there's so many options. Like you said, a lot of restaurants now too. I mean, they'll have like a plant-based burger on the menu, but also like a lot of these more ethnic food places have, just traditionally they have more plant-based people in their community. So like you said, Indian restaurants always have plant-based sections of the menu. I live within walking distance of two of the best Thai places in San Diego. So
nice.
One is completely vegetarian. I think the only thing that they have that's not vegan is egg, something with egg in it. But it's completely vegetarian. And the other one across the street is not, but they have a good vegetarian menu, vegan menu. So anyway, I digress. If you come to San Diego, hit me up. I'll buy somebody. That's what I'm going to do. I'm just putting it out there right now. If I see you in public somewhere and you want to eat and you're like, I want to eat with you, but it like, or whatever, that sounds really stupid. I want to have dinner. I will buy you a dinner, but it has to be vegan, or I'll buy you a breakfast or lunch, but it has to be vegan. So there you go. I'm buying anybody I see in public vegan food.
You heard it here.
Remember
first.
That for conferences. Free food.
And that does not include alcohol, but I'll still buy you a drink because I'm nice. Okay. That's it. That's the episode of awesomeness of, I don't know what we're going to name this yet, but it'll be fun. And we really appreciate your time. Remember to check out the website again. That's animalplacefoodforthought.org. You can, all the contact information is there. The Grant Cycle stuff is there. So you can apply for those and adopt a vegan menu. You want to adopt animals, we'll now adopt a vegan menu. So
yes. Align your menu with your mission. That's our slogan.
Solid. Yeah. So save them all.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks for listening. Check out the website, keepithumane.com. Don't forget to like, share, rate the podcast. And as always, we like to say,
keep it
humane.
Maine.